The Tom Woods Show, episode 680.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, it's almost that time. Bob Murphy and I are putting on the event of the year. It's the Contra Cruise, setting sail in October 2016. We've got game show style games in store for you. We got music and karaoke. We got great fellowships, sessions, a live recording of the current episode of Contra Krugman, and much more. So check it out at ContraCruise.com. If you're a homeschooling parent, you're probably working too hard. Check out the Ron Paul curriculum, which is self-taught and gives your kids an education you and I would have given our right arms for. Plus, get $160 worth of free bonuses when you join through my special link, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here on my own today, and I think I'm going to talk about conservatives. That's a fun thing to talk about. And those of you who are conservative, or you're, let's say you lean in a conservative direction, if you're saying, why doesn't Woods spend his time talking about progressives? Well, obviously you haven't listened to many episodes of the show. There are many, many, many of those, especially recently, and the whole list of them is at tomwoods.com/episodes, which, by the way, I prefer that to, I guess it's tomwoods.com/podcast or podcasts. That gives you maybe the five or six most recent ones on the screen, but the entire list, so that you can scroll down and see them all on one screen, is at tomwoods.com/episodes. Just as an aside, I prefer that page. Now, before I jump into this, let me tell you that a couple of episodes I've been promising you are now more or less cast in stone. I've got the numbers for you, so it won't be this week, but episode 685, if all goes well, will be the debate on free trade between Bob Murphy and Vox Dei, and episode 686 will be the roundtable discussion about the Libertarian Party and its future, and indeed its present. All right, I want to talk about the problem with conservatives today, and the reason I'm doing this is that I just listened to an episode of Mises Weekends with Jeff Deist, and he had a lot of interesting things to say about conservatives, and the previous week he did an episode on progressives, so maybe I'll do that kind of episode sometime in the future. But I want to talk about this because I myself come from a conservative background. If you've listened to the show at all, for any length of time anyway, you'll know that about me, that that's where I'm coming from. I come from a conservative background. Now, I didn't come from a religious household. I converted to Catholicism later on. But I came from a sort of street corner conservative, common sense Reagan Democrat kind of household. I mean, my father would not have described himself as a Reagan Democrat, but he had a lot of those characteristics. He was a blue-collar worker. He supported what Reagan was doing in the Cold War, as did I. He did like to see fiscal responsibility, although, you know, there's a shortage of that in American history, really, with almost all the presidents, let's say. But that's how I grew up. So I did not grow up in a left-wing household. I grew up with a conservative kind of background. And by the time I left high school, I was a moderate Republican, as I've told you before. I believed in more or less fiscal responsibility, but I did feel like there were certain causes the government should be funding and that we did need a robust safety net. And then overseas, we needed military intervention. So I claim to believe in the free market, but not really, right? In practice, not really. And so in that way, I feel like I'm a perfect parallel of the conservative movement. I say I favor the free market, but, you know, not really. If I actually look at what they do, and I feel like actions speak louder than words, I don't really find that there is this strict fidelity to the free market. I mean, we look at how many conservatives, like Paul Ryan, the guy we were all supposed to rally to, and he's the policy wonk, and he does all the arithmetic, and he knows how to balance the budget. And every one of his budgets turned out to be a scam, if you look at it in any detail at all, which they assume the conservative masses won't. That it'll be enough for them that Hillary Clinton doesn't like his budget, and that's all they need to know. It's like these people are walking around with kick me signs on their backs. You know, please, please, conservative establishment, kick me. Please, Heritage Foundation, send me a donation letter, even though you have accomplished absolutely nothing since you were created. Just kick me. Go ahead and kick me. in his own commentary on this, by the way, Jeff Deist, who, if I didn't mention, is the president of the Mises Institute, and I'll be linking to both his comments on conservatives and progressives at tomwoods.com/680. He reminds us of that great statement by Lysander Spooner. Kevin Gutzman and I included it in our book, Who Killed the Constitution? It's my favorite thing Spooner ever said. And I'm not going to read the exact quotation, but I'll paraphrase it. It basically says that, you know, whatever you want to say about the Constitution, we're faced with two and only two possibilities. That either the Constitution authorizes the government we have now, or it has been helpless to stop it. Either way, it is unfit to exist. That's the kind of quotation that when you hear it, your head explodes and you begin thinking in a different way. I guess the head explodes, well, you know, obviously with your brain everywhere, you would think in a different way, but that quotation really affected me when I first heard it, that's for sure. And I think we can say the same thing about conservatives. As Jeff Deist says, either conservatives support the regime under which we live, or they've been helpless to stop it. But they have had vastly, vastly more power, visibility, and influence than libertarians could ever dream of having. And what have they accomplished? Great conservative victories. That's one of the world's shortest books. And yet somehow they are extraordinary at fundraising and direct mail, building mailing lists and then milking those mailing lists. Let me give you an example. Let's take the Heritage Foundation. There's the great conservative think tank. They're going to take on Washington, D.C. All right. Well, let's look at their money. Again, Jeff talked about this. This shocked me. They've got $700 million in investments, stocks, and the like. They had a single year surplus of $20 million. And yet they send out letters to little old ladies asking them for $50. What's going on there? Something screwy about that. Especially since they can claim nothing. What have they accomplished? With hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars spent over the years, what have they done? In what way is life different because of them? Because I think when you spend that much money, there has to be some accounting of yourself. And I'll tell you something. Obviously they're terrible on foreign policy. It's just propaganda. It's straight out of the Kremlin. Straight out of the Kremlin. Propaganda the likes of which American conservatives would laugh at if they heard it coming from the Soviet Union. But because it comes from their leaders and their think tanks and their sacred and holy presidents, these are people who don't believe in idolatry, by the way, but when you look at the way they wave flags and bow down before the president and demand that we respect his office and on, you could have fooled me. And it's funny, by the way, that they still talk about we're the greatest country in the world and the freest country in the world and wave that flag. Look, conservatives are without a home right now. Every institution of American society hates and despises them. If they're authentic conservatives, they are hated and despised. If they're fakes, then they've probably been co-opted into the establishment. They're on CNN or they're in the New York Times or whatever. Then they're safe, domesticated conservatives. But if they're real conservatives, they are hated and loathed, whether it's in Hollywood or in academia or wherever it is, local government, federal government, they are hated everywhere. And yet they are, I don't know how to describe, Stockholm Syndrome? I don't know how to describe how they still go around cheering USA, USA. You are a foreigner in your own country now, conservatives, and you're still singing the old songs from the 1980s. Wake up. Anyway, let me get back to the Heritage Foundation. My view is that given that nothing the conservatives have tried to keep the federal government in check has worked, maybe we should try something else. So I wrote a book in 2010 called Nullification. You can get the audiobook for free through the Audible offer at tomwoodsaudio.com. You can listen to it while you're driving. And in that book, I make the historical strategic, moral, and constitutional case for nullification. And it's very strong. It's very strong, the case for it. Most people don't realize just how strong it is. The idea that the states have the power to refuse to allow the enforcement of an unconstitutional federal law within their borders. Now, I realize that saying that, again, puts me outside the 3x5 card of allowable opinion. I get that. I get that the New York Times doesn't want me saying that, that law professors who know nothing about the subject don't want me to say it. The whole political class doesn't want me to say it. I mean, every group of any influence at all wants me to not talk about that. I get that. But that's precisely why I want to talk about it, because most of the time, not always, but most of the time, when you hit on a topic that all those groups want you to avoid, you've really got something. So what the heck? Why not? Why not at least give it a try? Have some governors and legislatures with some guts who say, we're simply not going to do this. And go ahead, send in the tanks. You're trying to promote global democracy? Show people what global democracy looks like. You send in the tanks when you don't like an outcome. Go ahead, show them. I'd like to see that. Give it a try. Why not, right? Why not? So I wrote this book, and we've got a lot of grassroots interest in it. And yet, although I did get some attention among right-wing media, now I've been on right-wing media all over the place, all the major radio shows I've been on, and the TV shows I've been on. But when this book came out, all of a sudden, not a word from Glenn Beck. Gone. He wanted to talk to me about Meltdown, but he has a lawyer who is his right-hand man. And, of course, a lawyer was trained where? In one of the American law schools, which is completely hopeless, right? You would think that you would, you know, I don't want to be a jerk about this, but be bright enough to realize that the American law schools are totally corrupt. Maybe you got to take their constitutional law with a grain of salt. Not this guy, apparently. So even though we got a physical copy of this book right into Glenn Beck's hands, remember, he's supposed to be, I pick on him only because he's supposed to be the one who's the closest to us, according to what I read in my Twitter feed. He's the closest to us, and we have to reach out to him, and he's willing to take unorthodox positions. Well, here's an unorthodox position. And I got blurbs from Judge Napolitano, I got Barry Goldwater Jr., I got Walter Williams, a blurb, Ron Paul supports it, all that. Nothing, not a word, nothing. But worse than that was that the Heritage Foundation just came out actively in opposition. Now, I could understand if maybe the Heritage Foundation had been having success after success, and they come along and they say to this upstart kid, look, kid, you know, shut up about your nullification stuff. That ain't going to fly. We're doing a lot more good with our, whatever, our policy papers that we write and that go into the garbage. We're having a lot more success with that. They've had no successes to speak of whatsoever, none whatsoever, and they spend their time writing articles against nullification that could have been written by Think Progress, by any left-wing site, exactly the same arguments. They're all stupid Alexander Hamilton, John Marshall arguments that can be dispatched in no time at all. Now, there are people who have made some decent arguments, but these are just awful. These are awful arguments. They're just because they're not used to dealing with this, so they have no training in it. So whatever, they'll just throw in a lot of stuff hoping something will stick. So when a group of people actually decide to do something that might actually rock the boat a little bit, that might not just be the status quo over and over, the Heritage Foundation makes clear, everybody knows they are against this. Why? That would be irresponsible. And my gosh, isn't that the worst crime in the world, right, in America today? Being irresponsible. Responsible means sitting back like some loser and taking what the federal government dishes out to you. That's responsible. Well, I guess I just don't want to be responsible. I guess I don't want to be responsible. So there's the Heritage Foundation. When push comes to shove, they will actually come out against you on stuff like that. Meanwhile, the 10th Amendment Center, which celebrates its 10th anniversary this very month, June 2016, was launched by one guy in his apartment. And he's the one who got out there, got coverage all over the world for his bill to turn off the water to the NSA facility in Utah. It needs an enormous number of millions and millions and millions of gallons of water every day to cool its equipment. Well, Who says Utah is obligated to supply it with that water? Brilliant. Brilliant. There are many other features of the proposed bill, like if you gather information on me using this facility and you try to use it against me in a court in Utah, it won't be admissible. Just fantastic stuff. The sort of thing that if the Heritage Foundation believed in freedom, they would have been doing. Well, they're dead set against it. Dead set against it. Typical. Typical. Absolutely to be expected. And I got emails and tweets saying, I'm so surprised the Heritage Foundation won't support you. And on the one hand, I appreciate the sweetness of notes like that. But on the other hand, how naive can you be? I mean, you've not been following American political life at all if you thought the Heritage Foundation was going to stray from the 3x5 card. They will do anything in the world to make sure the New York Times respects them. And by respect them, I don't mean approve of everything they say, but welcome them as a responsible voice on the right. You know, they love that. They eat that up. Why, we're responsible voices on the right. And as a result, we've accomplished absolutely nothing. I've talked a lot about foreign policy and conservatives, and I'll try and link to, let me write this down, foreign policy related episodes. I'll put some related episodes that would appeal to conservatives on foreign policy, like my speech in Los Angeles at Nullify Now, where the last 15 minutes I was rebuking the conservatives in the room for being people who, they don't believe a word of what the federal government says on domestic policy. Not a word! But when it's foreign policy, they will stand up and salute. And they don't believe in intervention. Why, that will have unintended consequences. But there won't be any unintended consequences of, you know, the 27 interventions that John McCain favors. You know, and it's never Trump, according to Bill Kristol, but always Romney, always McCain, always Bush. How can you possibly take a guy like that seriously? I feel like the only people who have a right to be never Trump would be libertarians. Because we were never Romney, never McCain, never Bush. At least we're consistent. I don't see the consistency in, oh, I like Bush. You know, he might have been a little bit too big government for me, but not enough to oppose him. I like McCain, liked Romney, but I don't like Trump. What, because I favor fiscal restraint? Really? Or I favor constitutional government? Really? Come on. Come on. What kind of a loser would you have to be? And I know I'm sounding like right-wing radio, but that's my heritage, people. You know, I'm just being true to my heritage here. On a show like this where I don't have a guest to restrain me, I'm just expressing who I, you know, was made into by these people. All right, let's see. What else have I got written down here? Oh, fiscal restraint. How about Medicare Part D? Let's just pick one thing from the Bush years. One thing. Here's a president they refuse to repudiate, and he passes Medicare Part D in 2003. The most, this thing is unbelievably open-ended in terms of how much money is going to be spent on it. It makes the long-term fiscal picture vastly, vastly worse. And it was entirely cynical. As Jeff points out in his commentary, it was passed to get more seniors to vote for George W. Bush in 2004. And get them not to vote for John Kerry, which is why so many Democrats voted against it. Not like they're what are they going to be against another entitlement program? They voted against it because they didn't want to give ammunition to Bush against Kerry. That's what this is boiling down to. This is the fiscally responsible party, and people continue to hold signs and volunteer for them, and they must get such a laugh at these poor people, which I guess that was one of the things that woke me up. I thought, I just don't like being laughed at. And as long as I'm standing out here holding this Republican Party sign, that is exactly what's happening. The people at the top who have absolutely no intention of ever changing anything or cutting anything or restoring the Constitution or anything, any of that, they have no intention of doing that. And anybody who did have an intention of doing that, they would railroad out of the party. First opportunity. Well, I don't want to be laughed at by people like that. I want to laugh at those people. Or how about abortion? All right, I'm against abortion. I did an episode on abortion. I think everybody knows how I feel about abortion. I think there are excellent libertarian arguments against abortion. But what about the strategic approach that conservatives have taken to abortion since 1973 when Roe versus Wade was handed down? Well, they have spent a lot of money, donated a lot of money to groups that fundraise to try to overturn Roe versus Wade, but that's about it. And when Ron Paul actually said, well, why don't you just strip the courts of jurisdiction over abortion, given that they didn't have any to begin with, and the Constitution authorized you to do that. They have no interest in that. No interest whatsoever. No federalism, nothing. No interest in that at all. We're going to – so what's the result been? Well, abortion is, as Jeff says, just as legal as it ever was. And yet, what if they had taken that money and spent it on ways that civil society could make life easier on young women who are expecting and don't know how they're going to manage a child? Maybe they could have supported those women. They could have done various things to make abortion less thinkable for people. There are all kinds of things you could do with the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that were blown on politics that got them exactly nothing. Exactly zero is what they got. So, again, with conservatives, they're totally conventional. They think of themselves as being – they're so cheeky because they're against Obama and they're against Hillary and – well, whatever, you know, they're against Bill Clinton, and this makes them cheeky and bold. But when push comes to shove, they're not bold at all. They're totally conventional. Some politician gives a pretty speech, that's all they need to hear, they go vote for that guy. Somebody says, I'm pro-life, they blow a lot of money on that guy. He accomplishes nothing for them, and then they wait for the next thing to come around. Totally conventional. Instead of saying, let's think unconventionally. Let's not think about a political solution to this, because right now there obviously isn't one. I mean, what more, how much more would have to happen? So how many years has it been? 43 years now since Roe versus Wade. You've had 43 years to implement a political solution. There still isn't one forthcoming, and that's all they can think of is that. It's all they can think of. That's what I mean. They are totally domesticated. They are sitting right there on the plantation. They're not moving. They're totally domesticated. And if somebody comes along and talks to them about nullification or something bold, they'll be the first to jump on the bandwagon saying, oh, that's irresponsible. That's probably racist. So they've adopted the language of the enemy, of their own perceived enemies. And that is a domesticated lapdog right there. Meanwhile, they are reduced to these religious freedom laws to try to make sure they don't have to bake a cake for a homosexual couple. Now, I have some critics on this issue who they grudgingly concede, all right, I agree, people shouldn't have to be forced, shouldn't be forced to bake cakes, I'll grant that. But my goodness, all Woods can see in the world is cakes. Doesn't he know there's more important stuff in the world than cakes? Yes, I do. Check out tomwoods.com/episodes. You'll find many, many non-cake topics that have been covered on the show. The reason I talk about cakes quite infrequently, to my shame, by the way, I should be talking about cakes much more, is precisely that there's so much more to it than cakes. I mean, really, libertarians of all people should be able to see the big picture of things. This is one of my big problems with Gary Johnson, is that I don't think he sees the big picture. Yeah, he might get a lot of votes. Maybe he will. If he thinks that what makes libertarians great is that we take the best of both parties, you've got to be kidding me. That's a guy who does not see the big picture. Well, the big picture of the cakes is, what it boils down to is a totalitarian insinuation of politics into every aspect of life. That's what's being resisted here. It's not the cake thing, per se. It's this insinuation of politics into every nook and cranny of life. So it doesn't matter if it's a cake, or what if I'm a dance instructor? What if I'm a dance instructor and I say, I want to teach male-female couples how to dance. I really don't want to teach two men how to dance. I just don't want to do that. Well, I know all the fashionable libertarians will engage in virtue signaling to make sure the whole world knows that they think that dance instructor is a terrible bigot who should be shunned and all that. I know that. I've known libertarians long enough to know there'll be enough of them who will spend most of their time condemning the dance instructor and then at the end say, well, he probably shouldn't be forced to teach them, but we should criticize him all day long, 24 hours a day. All right, if that's how you want to spend your time, fine. That has nothing whatsoever to do with libertarianism, but if that's how you want to spend your time, knock yourself out. you see how one little intervention into private life turns into intervention everywhere. And then it becomes seeking out your inmost thoughts. Well, wait a minute. I mean, surely you support the new regime where everybody's forced to do all these things, right? And your kids support it too, right? Kids darn well better support it, because we're going to make sure they suffer in school if they don't. And just before you know it, it's just this crazy totalitarian web of thought control and action control. That's a problem. And yet the conservatives are totally helpless against it. Totally helpless. And of course, the main reason is, and I'm not allowed to say this, I know. Believe me, I know I'm not allowed to say this. But the problem is, as soon as you concede public accommodation and anti-discrimination law, as soon as you concede the morality of that, then what's the problem with forcing people to bake a cake? And then you're reduced to, well, you know, being homosexual is a choice, but being black isn't. And this is, you know, people say, no, it's not. And then you're arguing back and forth about what's a choice and what isn't. That's the problem with as soon as you accept this principle. Now, I realize it's very hard not to accept that principle, given that 99% of people do think it's moral to crack somebody's skull if he won't serve a customer you think he ought to serve. I realize that. Most people do believe that. And most people have given up on that particular cause. As long as they understand that the result of that is going to be the cakes. And you're going to try to pass your religious liberty laws, but people are going to say, why should you get an exception? This is a general rule that we all accept. So it goes to show that idea of public accommodation has consequences that not everybody's going to like. And then you're reduced to trying to plead for special exemptions for yourself. That's not going to fly. That's not going to go anywhere. Now, we're going to talk also next week. I'm going to talk to Ryan McMakin on this subject of public accommodation and anti-discrimination law and the real history of minority advancement in America. And that real history is fascinating. And it really upends the way we think about the role the federal government played in helping people in the 1960s. It totally upends it, which is why this history is not taught anywhere. So we'll get to that then. But basically what we have in the conservative movement are domesticated lapdogs. I'm telling you, that's what it is. I used to be one of them. I used to be the people I would hate the most would be the consistent, principled people who actually wanted to do something. And I would say, doggone it, send a donation to the Heritage Foundation and that'll get things done. And, you know, after a while, when nothing gets done, it does. It ought to make you think. Think differently. And so I did start thinking differently. I thought, you know, either I favor the free market or I don't. Or, you know, either I believe that society can run itself, or I believe it needs to be engineered by a political class. Those are my options. Okay, those are my options. And so I chose. And I discovered libertarianism, and I read about it, and I absorbed it, and I loved it. I loved the beauty of it. I loved the elegant simplicity of it. And yet I loved that, on the one hand, although its principles are elegantly simple, I can devote the rest of my life to the intellectual pleasure of delving into all the implications of it and how we see it in history or how it applies to the economy or all these other areas. Wonderful. It's great. That's why I'm on episode 680 and I'm just getting started. And so conservatives ought to understand they don't have a home anymore. If they really do believe in what they profess to believe, if they believe in prudence and moral absolutes and respect for tradition and localism, there's nothing that the modern conservative movement and the Republican Party believe in less than that. That's you have no home anymore. It's over. So think about it. At this point, what you're facing, if let's say you're a social conservative, you cannot change a moral problem through politics. It can't be done. The horse has left the stable. Politics follows culture in that regard. So you're not going to be able to pass a law, crack some skulls, change people's minds, and get back the America that you want back. That can't happen. What you can do is do your best for your family and your community. And the best way to do that is to drive the federal government as far out as possible, to leave you alone. And this is why, you know, I mean, Walter Block would say about any group he can think of, whether it's animal rights people or social conservatives or people in between or people who are both, whatever, he says, you know, under us, you won't get everything you want, but but you'll get something. Everybody will get some part of the picture of what he wants. So this is why you ought to consider libertarianism. And if you're interested in it, well, this here show is a pretty good place to start. I don't want to give you a bunch of books. I got a whole bunch of books on that subject. In fact, actually, what am I saying? Of course, how am I not going to give you books? Check out tomwoods.com/goodbooks, all one word. tomwoods.com/goodbooks. I'll link to that also at tomwoods.com/680. Now, let's see what else I have to tell you about. Oh, yeah, well, how about this? This seems to be coming at an appropriate time. I will give a shout-out to websites that are created or blogs that are created through my Bluehost affiliate link. So people go to tomwoods.com/publicity. They sign up for hosting. They get a nice little blog. And then I mention it to you folks here, and I link to it on my show notes pages, and I send you free tutorials and all this stuff. And there's a brand new site, as it turns out, by a listener who did this. And the blog is called thingsnotseen.info. So the blog is Things Not Seen, Following Jesus in an Unfree World. And the blogger describes himself, blogger Aaron Keith Harris, describes himself as a Christian and a libertarian, and that this blog, thingsnotseen.info, is a place for me to write from that perspective about life and the things that give life meaning. Faith, politics, education, economics, books, movies, television, music, and baseball. So, and he also has an intention of starting a podcast, so this is great. It's great to live in this world these days. So thingsnotseen.info will be of interest to people who are in that sort of niche, and I'm going to link to that as the listener website mentioned at tomwoods.com/680. So again, if you would like to start up a site and get free publicity and my tutorials to get you up and running, all that free stuff, then before you do that, check it out at tomwoods.com/publicity, and you'll find out all about it. All right, that's it for today. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.